This should be an interesting day. I don't know. I'm going to be doing a teaching in a different way I've never done before. I'm actually teaching out of a magazine that I get. I get all these weird magazines in the mail. This one's from the Orthodox Union, which I'm a member of. I join to keep up with the other side. I like to see what the opposition is doing. So I kind of have my own spy network, you know. And one of the things I do is keep up with the rabbis, which is very hard to do, believe me. But, you know, it's interesting that when Moses came down from the mountain, Mount Sinai that was, he brought with him the Torah. And the Torah had 613 commandments. And he asked Israel to obey them, because, and they said, everything you say we will do and obey. And that was it. Everything that was written there, he read. And then they said, everything you say we will obey. Well, that's great. Got all these commandments, but now how do we do them? Well, God, I guess, leaves us a lot of discretion and latitude in how we're supposed to observe these commandments. There's no iron set rule in the Torah about how to do certain things. You know, for the Sabbath, there's only 6 commandments on the Sabbath to do. Well, they set up this system where Moses is the leader and he appoints a whole bunch of people to be his commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds, and they're supposed to come to him with issues and he's supposed to decide. Okay? And there's nothing really that talks about what happens if you violate one of these commandments. There's only a couple things in the Torah. If you read in the book of Numbers, a guy's out gathering wood on the Sabbath. That's a no-no. So none of you go out and get wood on the Sabbath. That's a no-no because the penalty for that was death. And they stoned him to death. And I know we have lots of rocks laying around here. So, and Israel's just full of rocks. So yeah. Behave yourself when we go. All right. But that was, you know, the only penalty. Well, for years and years and years, they had this system, and the only people who were functioning in leadership were priests. And the priests would serve in a ceremonial way in the temple. They wouldn't decide things, issues, or anything like that. There was really nobody to decide these things. And then the temple gets destroyed in the year 70 AD, and guess what happened to the priests? They're out of work. There's nobody in charge. Who's going to run the place? Well, along comes this group of people called the rabbis. The rabbis are means teachers, but these rabbis have seated themselves in the chair of Moses and have appointed themselves to be judge and jury and executioner for all these rules. And they start and they develop this system of how to prevent people from breaking these 6 Sabbath rules, and they come up with 1,893 rules to follow. And more, because we're going to see more of them today. I mean, how's a paranoid person going to deal with that? How is a person in their right mind going to deal with that? How do you deal with that kind of stuff? Well, it gets a little difficult, but the rabbis created something they called the Oral Torah. When Moses came down from the mountain, not only did he bring this written Torah, which everybody said they'd obey, but he brought down an Oral Torah, which for thousands of years, 1,500 years to be exact, it was passed down orally from one person to another. How many of you have ever played the game telephone? Where you sit in a little circle of about 8 people and you whisper into each ear, and by the time it gets to the end, it's not the same thing. Well, for 1,500 years, they're playing telephone with all these rules. 1,893 just for the Sabbath, plus others. And they're passing them down. And then in the first century, when the temple gets destroyed and Israel is being kicked out of the land, they're saying, we're going to lose all of our people. We need to write this stuff down so they can all remember it. So they started writing down things, and they created the Mishnah and then the Gemara, and they took the Mishnah and the Gemara and put them together and formed the Talmud, which is this massive work. Right now it has like 20 million words in it. It's the largest collection of words in the whole world about things. And so now, with all these rules, they still have problems. I want to read you some problems that they have, because this year is really difficult, because Passover begins when the sun goes down on Shabbat. Passover doesn't normally do that. It normally begins in the middle of the week, so you got certain rules that you follow. But now, there's certain things that go on Shabbat or don't go on Shabbat that are going to interfere with getting ready for Passover. So what do we do about all that? And so I got this magazine in the mail that tells me everything I need to know. The Talmud in the book, there's one of the books called Pesachim, which is Pesach, 66a, relates that towards the end of the temple period, the sages could not recall details of the Passover observances when the eve of Passover occurred on Shabbat. So they're already saying, we don't know what we're supposed to do. Due to the relative infrequency of this occurrence, doesn't happen very often, and the unique circumstances that it provides, we would be well served to review beforehand and familiarize ourselves with some of the relevant halachot. Now, those of you who are in my Thursday night class learned about the word halacha, which means the way you walk. It's the whole system of Israel. The legal system is called their halacha. It's the way we're supposed to walk in our lives. The word halak means to walk. Well, firstborn males are required. Who's a firstborn male? Yeah. We're required to fast on the eve of Passover, if you're Jewish. How many of you are Jewish? In commemoration of the final plague, the slaying of the firstborn, right? God killed every firstborn Egyptian and saved every firstborn Jew. Normally, this fast is observed on the 14th day of Nisan. This year, since that day is Shabbat, when fasting is not allowed to fast on Shabbat, the fast will have to be observed not on Friday, but on Thursday, the 12th of Nisan. As in all years, though, there's a loophole. The fast can be circumvented by participation in a seduot mitzvah, such as suyim. You can go to the synagogue and say these suyim prayers and get out of it. You don't have to fast. And that follows the morning service, though. You can't go in the afternoon and do that. You have to do it in the morning, on Thursday morning. So make sure your calendar's clear. It's tough being Jewish. This year, Berakat Chametz, the search for leaven. How many of you search for leaven in your house? You do that ceremony? Yeah. Well, guess what? This year you can only do it on Thursday night, the 13th of Nisan, April 17th. After the search, the nullification declaration for unidentified Chametz is recited. As in other years, this mitzvah is performed with a blessing only if done on the designated night. Those who are traveling or otherwise unable to search on that night should do so without blessing on the last night they will be present. So you could do it on, if you're going to be gone Thursday, you could do it on Wednesday night, but you can't do the blessing. You got that? Hope you're writing this down, because if you're going to follow the Torah, you got to do it explicitly, letter for letter, dot the I's, cross the T's. Otherwise, don't be telling me that I'm not observing something on Shabbat. How many of you drove here today? You live less than a half a mile, three quarters of a mile. How many of you live three quarters of a mile from here? Well, you guys could walk. The rest of us would have had to gone over and stayed at their house last night in order to come here, because we're not allowed to drive on the Shabbat. Because if you start your engine, I don't know about your car, but mine emits a spark, which is called fire. And when you have a fire, you're not allowed to light one on Shabbat. That's one of the six rules in the Torah. So you're really grossly violating Shabbat by coming here. So don't tell me that I'm doing something wrong on Shabbat. Although this year, chametz may be eaten all day Friday. You can eat all the chametz you want. Go to Bagel Bin, Brugger's, you know, Panera, just chametz yourself. It is still customary to burn the chametz before the sixth hour of the day. So you got to have this done before the sixth hour of the day, which is what? Noon. Isn't it? No, not noon, but 3 o'clock? 3 o'clock. This is done so as not to cause confusion during regular years when the burning of comets takes place on the day before Passover itself, and time is obligatory. Oh, the second nullification declaration of all comets is not said following the burning of comets, since comets may still be consumed. You burn it all, but you could still eat it until Shabbat morning. One should be careful to calculate how much comets the family will consume by Shabbat morning and only leave that amount over. So don't save more comets than you know you can eat. So if you normally have a bagel Saturday morning, don't save 2 bagels. It's tough being Jewish. Since no one is allowed to conduct business on Shabbat, one should make sure that arrangements are made before Shabbat for the sale of chametz to a non-Jew. You can't keep your chametz. You have to sell it to some non-Jewish person. After the sale, the chametz being sold no longer belongs to the Jew, so then they can't say that you got chametz in your house. And unless special arrangements were made to allow this sale to take place on Shabbat, one may not partake of this chametz. So then you can't eat that bagel, can you? Therefore, the rabbi conducting the sale should be asked, you can't make the sale, you have to go to a rabbi. They have to sell it for you. In fact, you have to give them a power of attorney for your chametz. Did you know that? Those of you who've been selling your chametz, you've been doing it illegally. You should be deported to Mexico or something, because you're illegal aliens. Therefore, the rabbis conducting the sale should be asked whether this chametz is permitted to be eaten on Shabbat. If someone forgot to sell his chametz before Shabbat, well, then you're going to have to talk to a rabbi, because it's just too confusing. The rules are just too messed up. Okay, there is an obligation to eat challah, or some loaf of bread on Shabbats, or, you know, some loaf of chametz at 3 Shabbat meals. Do you know that if you eat a meal and you don't include bread in it, that it's not a meal? A meal is defined as something that contains bread under Jewish law. It is forbidden to eat matzah on the eve of Passover. Many have the custom of avoiding matzah from Rosh Chodesh, Nisan, and even earlier. So if you buy matzah today, you're not supposed to eat it. Although we do it for communion. It's okay. I'll give you a buy on that one. After the 4th hour on the eve of Passover, it is forbidden to consume chametz. In light of this, how does one keep his or her home kosher for Passover and fulfill the obligation of eating the Shabbat meals? Boy, this is a fine line. It is tough to be Jewish. The general custom is to cook only kosher for Passover foods. Oh, for all the meals on Shabbat, and to serve them on Passover dishes, but bread, which is chametz, must be eaten. There are 2 ways this can be done. One can eat the challah before the meal over a disposable napkin. A paper plate would be good too. The napkin with any leftover crumbs should be folded up and completely eliminated from the home, e.g., flush down the toilet. The hands then should be washed before sitting down to eat the rest of the Shabbat meal. Whenever you go to the bath, you always wash your hands. If I have to tell you that, then you're in the wrong place. Alternatively, the obligation to eat bread at the Shabbat meal can be satisfied by eating egg matzah. Egg matzah you can eat. Since one cannot fulfill the obligation of eating matzah on the Seder night with egg matzah, it is not included in the prohibition. However, egg matzah is only considered bread when eaten in sufficient quantities. And we're going to talk about quantities in a few minutes, because they're important. Some maintain that one must eat a filling amount of egg matzah to consider it bread. Others hold that so long as it is eaten in the context of a filling meal, it is considered bread. If one plans on eating egg matzah, a rabbi should be consulted, because egg matzah is not chametz. The debate until that time, it may be eaten on the eve of Passover. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein holds that the prohibition of eating egg matzah begins at the 4th hour of the day. Others maintain it can be eaten until midday. Therefore, a rabbi should be consulted. Don't ask me, okay? Sephardic Jews, now if you're Sephardic and not Ashkenazic, or you're sick or elderly, which I kind of fit most of those categories, may continue to eat egg matzah until the 10th hour of the day. So we got to buy, huh? Although chametz, of course, is not burned on the Shabbat, the second, the kol chamira, the declaration of the nullification of chametz, should be recited during the 4th hour. You can't do it during the 5th hour or the 3rd hour, the 4th hour. How many fingers is that? All right. Most synagogues start the davening in very early on the Shabbat morning, so there's plenty of time to finish your chametz before the end of the 4th hour. So, because when you go to synagogue, you're there from 8 in the morning till afternoon. Most Jews do that, you know, and they show up. A lot of them come in late. They don't set their alarm clocks either. Some of you are really Jewish in that respect. You live on Jewish time. I must not be Jewish because I'm always early. Okay. Let's see. Let's skip down some of this because it's really tough. Let's see. Preparations for the Seder. Okay, we're going to go for the Seder now, okay? The Seder table should therefore not be set, nor should any other preparations be made until after nightfall. All the items for the Seder should be prepared before Shabbat. So you can't prepare all your meal on Shabbat for the Seder, and the Seder has to start after sundown, but you can't set the table until after sundown. Really tough. The 19th of April is going to be a paranoid day for a lot of Jews. You're going to pray for them. Because the Seder has to start as soon as possible after nightfall, but you can't start at nightfall because you have to still set the table. You're going to be running around like, hey. If one forgot to check the romaine lettuce before Shabbat, it should be checked before the Seder, but care should be taken not to kill any bugs, nor to perform any forbidden selection, since the checking could have been done before Yom Tov. Borer is only permitted with a shinui, such as removing the leaf from the bug or removing part of the leaf with the bug. You can't just kill the bug, you have to remove it. If one forgot to prepare the shank bone or roasted egg before Shabbat, these items can be prepared after Shabbat, provided they will be eaten on the first day of the holiday. The roasted shank bone may not be eaten at night. Who eats a bone anyway? One may only prepare a small amount of salt water on Yom Tov. So you can only have so much salt water prepared. Can't just make a whole bunch. Although it is permitted to nap on Shabbat so that one will be up for the Seder, one should not expressly verbalize this intention. I'm going to take a nap so I'm ready for the Seder. You're not supposed to do that. That's a no-no. Okay, Passover is an 8-day Jewish holiday of biblical origin. I guess some of you don't know what Passover is. Marking the birth of the Jewish people and their emergence as a unique nation in history, devoted to God's will. It celebrates the liberation of the children of Israel from slavery in Egypt over 3,000 years ago under the leadership of Moses. When does it begin? According to biblical law, Passover is determined by the Jewish lunar calendar and begins on the eve of the 15th day of the month of Nisan, although some would argue with that. The English date varies from year to year, falling in March or as late as April. This year, Passover begins at the end of Shabbat, Saturday evening, April 19th, which means that special arrangements need to be made for Shabbat meals, and I just told you about some of those. What does kosher for Passover mean? A lot of people get confused here. During Passover, Jewish law forbids the consumption of possessions by Jews of all edible fermented grain products, chametz, or related foods. Therefore, even foods and household products which meet the strict year-round dietary regulations are considered kosher, are nevertheless often unacceptable or require special preparation for Passover use in the Jewish home in order to be kosher for Passover. And I have the rest, this is just the words, and then the rest of this book is just pages and pages of what's good for Passover and what isn't. And they even go into aluminum foil and the names and baking soda and candles and cleaning products. There's even cleaning products are good for Passover and cleaning products that aren't. It's crazy. How can you tell if one product is kosher for Passover? Most processed foods and beverages require special rabbinic supervision for Passover use. They must also be for kosher for year-round use and prepared in accordance with all the regular Jewish dietary laws. Jewish consumers are urged to look for the, there's a U in a circle on the package, or the U, and it would say kosher for Passover, designation as an integral part of the product label, or else be familiar with the rabbi or organization giving the Passover endorsement. The mere mention of kosher for Passover on the label is not a sufficient guarantee of the product's acceptability for Passover use. The largest and most widely respected kosher supervisory agency is the Orthodox Union, and that's where you get the U from with the circle. Okay, there are a lot of products that say they're kosher for Passover, but they really aren't. You know, Coca-Cola is, always has been. Dairy Queen is kosher, but Dairy Queen wasn't kosher a while back. They lost all their business on 114th and Dodge. The rabbis took away their kosherness, and they got the place up to standards again, and it's now kosher again. But you know, Krispy Kreme says that they're kosher all the time, but guess what? Krispy Kreme ain't on the list of products that you can get here. So they're not kosher, although the sign in their store on 120th and Center says they are. Rotella's Bakery says they're kosher. But are they? Not for Passover, because they sell what? Bread. How many of you eat bread on Passover? No. Okay. All 8 days. Starts April 19th at sundown, and it goes to Sunday night, April 27th, when it gets dark, then you could eat bread again. So we have a bread party. What is matzah? Matzah is a crisp, flat, unleavened bread made of flour and water, which must be baked before the dough has had time to rise. It is the only type of bread which Jews may eat during Passover, and it must be made specially for Passover use under rabbinic supervision. There are matzahs that you can buy that are not kosher for Passover. You got to be careful when you go to the store and buy the matzah. Matzah can only be baked from flour mixing to baking 18 minutes, right? After 18, it starts yeasting, right? It's not good. You can't let any yeast get in there. What is yeast? Sin. We don't want any sin. You have to thoroughly cleanse your house. You have a Seder, which is the actual service that you do. What about pets? How many of you have pets? Okay, do they need kosher food for Passover? Since it is forbidden to own or benefit from comets during Passover, food that contains comets may not be fed to pets. However, it is permitted to give pets food that contains kitniot, whatever that is. If one is unable to procure pet food that does not contain chametz, does pet, what's that place called? Pet parlor, pet authority or something? Pets are us, Petsco? I don't know, do they sell kosher pet food? We need to look into that for Sweepy, our grand puppy. Huh? You don't think? That's a Gentile dog, though. If one is unable to procure pet food that does not contain chametz, some rabbinic authorities allow for sale, but Sweet Pea can't come over to our house. Some rabbinic authorities allow for a sale which would transfer to a Gentile the ownership and responsibility for caring of the pet. You could transfer your pet's ownership to it. Just ask your rabbi for guidance, but don't ask me. I want to tell you something about this transfer of ownership stuff, the selling stuff. It's like a cop-out, you know. It's a way, it's a loophole in the rules. We found a loophole in God's Torah, and we're going to use it to our extent. We're going to sell you all our chametz for a dollar, I'm going to do it on a strictly legal document. And after Passover is over, you're going to give me back all that chametz. That's not ridding your house of chametz. It's just getting temporarily reassigned. It's like those stupid elevators in the Jerusalem hotels. They stop at every floor on Shabbats. Well, I mean, it's great if you're on the 12th floor of the hotel. You don't have to walk up there. But the purpose, having a Gentile come in and turn on your lights before Shabbat begins so that you'll have lights during the Shabbat. The purpose of those things is to circumvent God's law. To me, it's a cop-out. And I say people who are doing that are not observing what God intends for them to do. Why do we light candles on the Shabbat? There's nothing in the Bible, although the prayer says we're commanded to light these lights to bless the Shabbat. They lit the candles so they would have lights in their house. Why did they light two candles? Not to sanctify and observe, but because they, in the old days, had two rooms in their houses. And one candle was for one room, and the other candle went into the other room. They all lived in two-room houses in them days. That's why they light two candles. There's no biblical thing that says you have to light candles. You could light two flashlights now. Or you can just turn on your lights before Shabbat begins and leave them on all night. I don't know. To me, it's all a cop-out. All right. I want to talk about wine and matzah and all this stuff. Okay, during the Passover, there are some basic obligations. During the Seder, we eat matzah. We drink 4 cups of wine. How many fingers is that? 4. 4 cups of wine. We eat bitter herbs, maror, and we relate the story of the Exodus, and we recite praise psalms, hallel. There are 3 times during the course of the Seder when matzah must be eaten. At the beginning of the Seder, when the special blessing over matzah is made, then we have what we call the Hillel sandwich that we eat with the bitter herbs and, you know, all that good stuff. And then there's another part at the end of the meal when we eat the afikoman. It's the last piece of matzah eaten. Okay, we're going to look at the appropriate amounts of these in a minute. We have 3 unbroken matzahs required for each Seder plate. Each individual must consume the minimum specified quantity. We're going to get into that during the course of the Seder. If the matzah from the Seder plate are insufficient, they should be supplemented by additional matzah. So you start with 3 and work your way up from there. The matzah is eaten while reclining on your left side. How many of our chairs do that for us? It's really difficult these days, but in the old days, that was a symbol of freedom. Reclining on your left side meant that you were no longer a slave. I don't know what reclining on your right side meant. But you do it on your left side, and then after the afikoman, you eat no more food. But the afikoman has to be eaten before midnight. So you can't have a real long Seder. To fulfill the mitzvot of the Seder, one must use certain matzah. I already talked about that. According to Ashkenazic practice, I'm an Ashkenazic Jew, matzah made with fruit juice or eggs, including egg matzah, chocolate-covered egg matzah, and white grape matzah are permissible on Passover only for elderly, sick, or young children who cannot digest regular matzah. So if you don't fit in those categories, you have to eat regular matzah. Under no circumstances should they be eaten by others at any time during Passover, nor can they be eaten to fulfill the mitzvot of the Seder. And if you're a Sephardic Jew, you have to talk to your rabbi, but not me. 4 cups of wine. Each Jew is obligated to drink 4 cups of wine. We used grape juice, which is kind of like wine, at the specified times during each Seder. The first at the start of the Seder following Kiddush. The second before the meal after reciting the Haggadah story. The third following the grace of the meal. And the last after completing the Psalms of Praise. Okay, we're going to look at how much we're supposed to drink here in a minute. Red wine is the preferred beverage for use during the Seder, not white wine. If a person has difficulty drinking wine, it may be diluted with kosher grape juice, although some authorities hold that one should dilute the wine with water. If one wishes to dilute the wine with water, an Orthodox rabbi should be consulted to determine the minimal acceptable proportions. So, if an individual cannot drink any grape product, then a rabbi should be consulted on another substitute beverage, like Coca-Cola, I guess. I don't know, but you have to drink 4 cups. One should drink the wine reclining on your left side. So, you probably need a straw. Okay, then there's bitter herbs. We have to eat this horseradish stuff. We all love this red horseradish. Or you can have romaine lettuce, too. You tell a story. Okay, measures and minimums. This is my favorite part, because I watch you at the Seder, and none of you seem to do this. In order to fulfill the mitzvot of the Passover Seder, it is necessary to consume a minimum quantity of the 4 cups of wine, matzah, and bitter herbs. There is a minimum quantity, and none of you achieve that, except me. And it has to be done in a minimum period of time. There's a time constraint here. For wine, the volume of most of the revi'it should be consumed. For matzah and marar, kaziyat is the minimum volume, and the time limit is kedei achilat pras. What does all that mean? Consult a rabbi. Here. They have historically disagreed as to the exact quantities that each of these represent in modern measures. So here's the modern equivalents for what they prescribe in the Bible. 3 fluid ounces is the minimum size of the wine cups used for the 4 cups. Each Seder participant must drink more than half this volume. So what's half? More than half of 3 ounces. 1 5/8 ounces for each of the 4 cups to fulfill the minimum mitzvah. And I see some people just go, sip. Ooh. They sip 4 times during the whole Seder, and then their cup is just full of stuff. What? You're one of them. My grandfather always conducted our Seder in my house when I was a little boy. And my grandfather always took that manischewitz and he poured it into my cup. And my grandfather said, you are to empty that cup 4 times during this Seder. And that's why I became an alcoholic. But it was good. When you're 8 years old, that is good stuff. And it was good ever since until it beat me into the ground. But to this day, I will still gulp that grape juice down. You know it, because you're always filling my cup. Right. All right, you ready for matzah now? Now that you've drunk? Approximately 1/2 of an average machine-made matzah, or 1/3 of a handmade matzah. So 1/2 of a whole matzah is for you. And if you have 10 people at your table, how many matzahs is that? 5 matzahs, right? There's never enough on the table. How about bitter herbs? Now, this is my favorite part, because that red horseradish, I always ask for a double dose because I use the ground horseradish. You can use a measuring cup to measure this, but you got to drink 0.7 fluid ounces. It's like the size of an olive size. Bitter herbs. If you're going to use lettuce leaves, which we don't, we make you do horseradish, so I won't even tell you, but you need enough to cover an area of 15 square inches, 3 by 5. And there's time limits. You can't just do this and, you know, say, oh, I'm going to gulp this wine down, but it's going to take me a while. Some people are careful to follow these opinions, which teach that the entire amounts for each mitzvah should be consumed in 1 or 2 swallows. In any case, the drinking of each cup of wine and the eating of the matzah and the maror should be completed within 4 minutes. In case of difficulty, see your rabbi, but don't ask me. And that's all I got to say today. Thank you.